be recorded.
Okay, so I want to share with you an idea by Rabbi Alex Israel in Parshas Pinchas. The basic gist of what we're going to do tonight is try to understand, which is, I guess, the underlying question to the shiur, even though it's listed here as question number four. But why was Yoshua chosen to be the leader as opposed to Pinchas? So if you kind of scroll down to... Yeah, there you go. Perfect. To Parachav Hei Pasuk Yud. So it says, Vayidaber Hashem al-Moshe le'mor. This is our parsha. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron ha-Kohen. Yishivir chamati me'al b'nei Yisrael. B'kano kinati b'tocham. Lo chiliti b'nei Yisrael b'kinati. So Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron the Kohen, he calmed down God, so to speak, from the Jewish people when he kano kinati. He was zealous in their midst, and the Jewish people were therefore not destroyed in God's zealousness. So Pinchas is like the star of the show in this week and last week's parsha. The question then becomes, why is it that Yoshua ultimately becomes the leader of the Jewish people? I want to hold off on that question for a while, because I want to try to first understand the psukim on the top of the page. But that, I think, is the underlying question. And I found it fascinating because sometimes you read something, like I bought a sefer recently because I was on a sefer shopping spree from Magid Books. And I actually didn't read it. I gave it to Malki and she started reading it and she was like, it's a good book, but everything in there is sort of like, I know it. And then I kind of, as I was preparing the Chabura this week, I looked in that sefer and I kind of felt the same way. But sometimes you read something and it like really is eye-opening because you're like, wow, I've read these psukim over and over and over again, and yet I never saw it that way. So tonight, that's really what I want to do. And there are some bolds and some underlines, which I think will help us figure those things out. So let's start from the beginning. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, alei el har avarim hazeh, God says to Moshe, I want you to go up to the mountain, and I want you to look out on the land that I've given to the Jewish people. So basically, what God is saying is, I want you to go up to the mountains and look to the other side of the Jordan River, because what you're going to see there is, that's the land of Israel, and that's the closest you're ever going to get. You're not going to go into the land, but at least you'll see it. Ra'ito tavena safta lamecha, you'll see it, and then you'll die. Just the way your brother died. Rashi points out why the emphasis on kasher nesaf aron achicha, because that's what Moshe wanted. Moshe was so jealous of the way Aaron died, and God says to him, don't worry about it. You're going to get that same death. Why? Kasher meritam pibim mibartzin b'merivat haidah like the yishenim b'mayim l'inehem heim mei merivat kadesh mibartzin. And it's all your fault, because you failed to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, right? You didn't sanctify my name, says God, by Mei Meriva. Fine. So the first question, other than why Yehoshua, is how does Moshe react to this event? Alei El Har Avarim, what's Moshe's reaction? What's Moshe's feelings? Now, Rashi doesn't really help us with that, but Rashi actually gives us another insight into what's going on here. Rashi says, Alei el har ha'avarim, lama nismecha lakan. Why am I told this now? So, Kevin shamar kodesh baruch hu naton titen lahem, when God said you're going to give them the land, amar oti tziva makum lanchil. God, so Moshe says, but God told me to give out the land, Shema Hutra Hagazeiro Bekines Laretz. Maybe God was matir his ned there, and maybe I'm going to come into the land. So Amelo Hakadosh Baruch Hu Gzeirati Bimkoma Umedet. No, my decree is still there. So the first reason why this is here is that Moshe Rabbeinu all of a sudden is given this like breath of fresh air, and he says to himself, maybe there's a chance I'm going into the land of Israel. Davar Acher Kevin Shenichnas Moshe l'nachla b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven samach v'amar k'medu b'lishnu shohut ar nidri. So Rashi gives another possibility. Not that he was told to be to give out the land, and therefore he felt that that God had been matir the neder, but rather he said, "Look, I'm in the land of b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven, and that land is the land of Israel now." So he said, maybe this is a sign that what? God was matir his ned there. Mashal amelech shegazer al beno shalu yikanes lepetach palatin shalo. So God, Rashi says, it's similar to a person who was gozer, a king that was gozer on his son, that he could not come into the inner part of his palace. Nichnas lashar v'uacharav, he comes in the gate and he's behind him. Lachatzer, to the courtyard, and he's behind him. The tracklin, he comes into the palace and he's behind him. Kevin Shabali Kanes Lakiton Amarlo Bini Mikan Velachatas Roli Kanes. And once he's ready to come into the inner room, the king turns him and says, no, I'm sorry, but here you can't come. So Moshe Rabbeinu was in the same boat. He said, it's gonna happen. I'm gonna be allowed into Eretz Yisrael. And I'm gonna be allowed into Eretz Yisrael. And he keeps saying to himself, I think it's gonna happen. And then in the end, God says to him, no, you're not Zoche. Okay. So that's how the
question.
Yeah.
The question and a comment. The question is, assuming that Hashem is not a mean entity, to say to Moshe, look over there, you can't go. Why do that? Why, you can just remind him at any time, privately or publicly, that you're still not able to go, but look at the land that we're going to give to the Jews.
So I can give you a couple answers. There is this is Shana Aleph Torah. Not from a Shana Aleph guy, but it's Shana Aleph Torah. So Rav Yedidya Berzon, this was like his vart. So he says that like Moshe Rabbeinu was told to look at the land of Israel, and what happens is, so I think it's actually Rav Yedidya's vart, maybe it's someone else's, I might be confusing it, but anyway, what happens? So he says, look at the land of Israel. So what's the purpose of looking at the land of Israel? So he says that he quotes, I think, Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Moshe says that there's different ways to embrace Kedusha. I could see Kedusha, I could feel Kedusha. There is value in both, meaning I could look from a distance and see something spiritually powerful, and it does something for me. It gives me like a spiritual boost. Moshe Rabbeinu got a spiritual boost from just looking at the land. But I actually, the truth is, David, what I think is I could take your question and maybe, you know, make it a little bit stronger. What I always found to be awful is if you look at the Rashis in Zos HaBracha, so what happens when Moshe is going up to die? When Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to die, you know what happens? As he's walking up, and he's like looking off from Har Nevo at where he's at the land of Israel, and Har Nevo has like a perfect like view into Israel. So he sees the Jews sinning here, and the Jews sinning here, and the Jews messing up here, and the Jews messing up here. I always find that's the worst. Like, meaning, the last minute that a person dies, in like the perfect world, we want it to be like a serene, peaceful experience. But for them to like live the trauma of, oh my God, the Jews for the next 2,000 years, this is what they're going to do in the land of Israel, I always found that to be awful. So it's not, I don't think it's, I'm not answering your question in the second one. I'm just taking your question and making it, I think, even more frustrating if you're Moshe Rabbeinu.
The other point that I'll get back to your topic is that just as you read through the Pasuk and the Rashi, so again we're reminded that the reason Moshe can't go and Aaron didn't go either is because it would have been real. And then it just struck me that Moshe's life was about saving Bnei Israel. Every time they did something terrible, Hashem is prepared to destroy them, he got them, and he saves them. Nobody davened for Moshe. It seems like he made this one mistake that cost him his dream. And nobody prior, the Avot, I guess, and the Shemayim, if they know what was going on, Malachim, whatever, Klal Yisrael, nobody davened for him on Moshe's behalf to get him over this one hump. That's just a sad commentary. That's not really a question. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, what I would comment back on that is I do think. And I think it's a important point, is that there's a good chance that Moshe Rabbeinu actually didn't really sin at Mei Meriva, that there's a lot more going on there. And I think the reason why that's important to me is because your question and so many other problems, like, why is it that Moshe, what did Moshe really do wrong? It doesn't seem like he did anything that terrible. So I'm more comfortable with either the thought that he was too powerful of a leader, Rav Sarotskin and Rabbi Rubel, and therefore he couldn't be the leader anymore. That's one possibility. The other possibility, which I actually like a lot, the first time I heard it was from Akiva Saknovitz, but it's one of the like Gush-type Shiurim, where they say that if you look at the Psukim, Moshe Rabbeinu hears the Jewish people complaining, and he hears the complaint from 40 years prior. We want to go back to Egypt, the land is bad, but if you read the Psukim carefully, it's actually not the case. He's actually saying something, they're saying something very different. Moshe Rabbeinu misses the point, and then like it's sort of like you're not going to get a lot of tefillah from the people, because what the people are doing is they're looking and saying, Moshe, you've lost your touch. Like, physically, you might have it in you to lead the Jewish people. Mentally, you might have it, but you don't have the, you're not in tune to the people. So, like, you're no longer suitable to lead them. Okay, so let's go back to the Psukim. Pasuk Tet Vav is one of, I believe it's the only time in the Torah we have this Pasuk. Vayedaber Moshe el Hashem Lemor. Moshe speaks to God saying. And normally we have tons of times like Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. Now when we say Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor, what God is doing is God is coming and he's giving a command. Do this. So is that what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing here? God is coming to Moshe. Moshe is coming to God and saying, God, I command you to do the following. So that's a question that we have to kind of wonder. And then, Pasuk Tet Zayin, Nifkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos L'chol Basar Ish Al Eida. So God should appoint some, right? Nifkod Hashem, God, Elokei Aruchos, the God of the winds, L'chol Basar, of all flesh, should appoint Ish Al Ha'eida. He should appoint a person on the Eida, to be over the Jewish people. So this is a very strange language to refer to God in, Elokei Haruchos. We actually had it in Parshas Korach. If you look down, actually you don't even have to scroll. It's the last source that you can see right now. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe v'Aaron l'emor, God speaks to Moshe and Aaron saying, Hibadlu mitoch ha'eda zo v'chalotam karaga. Separate yourself right away from the people and I will destroy them in a moment. Vayiplu al p'neihem, they fall on their face. This is Moshe and Aaron responding to God vayomru, and they say, Kel Elokei Aruchos l'chol basar, God, right, of all of the winds, l'chol basar, right, of all the of all mankind, ha'ish echad yechata v'al kol eidat tiktsov. Does one person sin and everybody gets punished? So that's again another really important point. Moshe Rabbeinu is using this strange language, which is unique, I think, to just these two places, of Hashem Elokei Aruchos L'chol Basar. Why that? Why does Moshe choose that language? And then, Asher Yetze Lifneihem, Asher Yavo Lifneihem. And he should go out in front, the person, this Ish that God is going to appoint over the Jewish people, he's going to Asher Yetze Lifneihem, he's going to go in front of them, Asher Yavo Lifneihem, he's going to come in front of them. Asher Yotzeim, he's going to take them out. Asher Yivieim, and bring them back. And he should not be like a, the Jewish people should not be like a group of sheep without a shepherd. Now, I purposely set up the Makoros the way I did, with quotation marks, which I almost never do. I'm not sure if I ever have done that. But I wanted it to be clear, what is Moshe's request? Moshe's request is Asher Yetze Lifneihem, Asher Yavo Lifneihem. I want a leader that will go out with them and come back in with them. So Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, God says back to Moshe, Kach lechot Yoshua ben Nun. I want you to take Yoshua ben Nun, Ashish Asher Ruach Bo. He's a man that is endowed with the Spirit of God. V'samachta ad yadcha alav. And I want you to put your hands on him. It's weird. Why does he have to do that? What's the purpose of this smicha? And I want you to put him in front of Elazar HaKohen, in front of the entire people, and command him to your eyes. And he should put from his hod, from his splendor or his aura, on you'll put from your aura on him, so that the entire Jewish people will hear it. Where else do we have in Tanakh a story like this, where somebody puts from their spirit on someone else? That was almost the Chabura. We might actually do it next week instead, even though it's not on the topic of Matos Masei. Who takes his successor and gives some of his own spirit to him? Not to put some people on the spot, but we learned this together in Malachim Bet.
Isn't it Eliyahu?
Yeah, good. Eliyahu puts it on who?
Elisha.
He puts it on Elisha. Right. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to do. He's supposed to put some of his spirit on Yehoshua. V'lifnei Elazar HaKohen yamod, and he should stand in front of Elazar HaKohen. V'sha'alo b'mishpat ha'urim l'fnei Hashem al piv yetzuv al piyavo. And he will ask before the Urim v'tumim, before God, and that is how they will decide who goes, when they go out and when they come back. Hu v'chol b'nei Yisrael ito v'chol ha'ida. He and the Jewish people and the entire nation. Okay. Vayas Moshe kasher tziva Hashem oto v'kachat Yehoshua v'idei l'fnei Elazar HaKohen v'lifnei kol ha'ida. Moshe does exactly what he's told. He puts Yehoshua in front of Elazar HaKohen and the entire people. V'yismoch et yadav alav. He puts his hands on top of him. And what does he do? V'yitzaveyu, and he commands him. Kasher diber Hashem v'yad Moshe. Just as God had commanded Moshe. Okay. So, the last question that we need to figure out is why this smicha thing? What's going on with this? So, five questions. How does Moshe react to this whole event? Specifically by Har HaAvarim. Why does Moshe use this language, strange language, it's not language that we normally use, of Kel Elokei Aruchos L'chol Basar? What kind of leader is Moshe looking for based on the qualifications that he lays out in Pasuk Yud Zayin? Why Yehoshua? We met Pinchas. Isn't Pinchas like a good choice? And why the smicha? Okay, so we're going to do low-hanging fruit first. Why smicha? Why do you think he has to give smicha to Yehoshua?
I guess he needs some sort of an anointment. He's not a Kohen. I mean, the people need to see him become anointed.
Yeah, why?
It's a
good thing for the people.
Yeah, why? Why is it important for the people to see? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I shouldn't have said it, but I said he's the schnook.
Okay, so...
he's going to be the successor. He's not related, so it's not a lineage thing. It's not as Moshe's son. He has to pass the torch in some way, I guess. This is how they show that.
Right.
So Yeshua hasn't taken really a leadership role before. He's the one who sets up the benches and stands for Shir.
Right.
So he led B'nai Israel when they fought Amalek.
Yeah.
Yeshua was a...
So I think that...
He's a brand new beast.
Yeah, I think we're all saying the same things, just coming from slightly different angles. But yes, Yehoshua's credibility, no matter what, is questioned, because even though it's true, as Steve said, he did lead them out to war. I also like Rabbi Alex Israel pointed out, which I never really thought about, but it's an interesting point to ponder, is that at Har Sinai, the fact that Yehoshua stands at the bottom of the mountain, that also creates a certain piece of leadership in him. Yes, he's not dealing with the Jews at Chet HaEgel, okay, but the fact is that that's kind of branding him as the Torah leader of the Jewish people. So you have that, but yeah, his resume, if for nothing else, is much thinner than Moshe's. Meaning, like, you know, there's two types of people. You could have a person that gets a job that's really not qualified for it, and then his resume is just thin, right? And, you know, a lot of people have been there. I certainly, when I got my first job, didn't have much of a resume. Okay. But then you also have people that their resume is actually pretty impressive. But if you're going to take over, you know, for Steve Jobs, doesn't matter who you are, you're gonna be, you know, in a bad spot, because as thick as your resume is, you're taking over for someone so much greater. So obviously, Lahavdil, that's where Yoshua and Moshe are relative to each other. Okay, so the smicha, I think, is he needs it because the Jewish people have to see that, like, Moshe affirms that this is a proper appointment. Okay, so that gets one question out of the way. Next question is, why Yoshua? We met Pinchas, and Pinchas sort of seems to have certain qualities that would make him potentially a leader. So Rav Meidan points out something interesting. If you look through, not Sefer Yoshua, but if you look through Sefer Shoftim, Pinchas is there, either in the Psukim or in the Medrash often, where the Psukim or the Medrash will tell us, hey, the Jewish people need a leader. Who comes and saves the day? It's always Pinchas. So if Meidan says, why? So if that's the case, that he's like, he's the man of the moment in Shoftim over and over again, then why wouldn't he have been the man of Yoshua? And this is what he says. I think it was worth reading the article by Rabbi Alex Israel just for this footnote by Rav Meidan. Rav Meidan says, it's the contrast of Yoshua, of the Tkufa of Sefer Yoshua, the time of Yoshua to the Tkufa of Shoftim. Yoshua was a time of established leadership. When you have an established leadership, what do you need? You need a real leader. You need a Yehoshua. Shoftim is a time where there is no leadership. When there's no leadership, what you need is spontaneous actions here and there. You need somebody that's going to move you from point A to point B just at certain specific times. Rav Meidan points out that Yehoshua was the perfect man for the time of Yehoshua, coming off the heels of Moshe Rabbeinu when they need an established leader. But Sefer Shoftim, when Ish Tacha Teino Tacha Gefno Tacha Teino, when each person was living underneath his vine, and he didn't care what was going on, and there were no leaders, then when the wheels fall off the bus, you need a Pinchas to come along with some act of spontaneity to save the Jewish people. So we answered two of our five questions, but we're still not sure how Moshe reacts to this whole story. It's not clear what's pshat in Yifkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos L'chol Basar. And the question is, what kind of leader are we really looking for? So those are my questions. So Rabbi Alex Israel points out that if you look in Sefer Shmuel, you have the words Asher Yetzev Asher Yavo, and there it's talking about leading them out in battle. What Shmuel, when Shmuel is describing what a king is, I believe that's where the psukim are, he's saying that the nature of a king is he has to be someone who's going to go out and come with the Jewish people. He can't be in his palace while the Jews are fighting, but he has to be at the battle scene. Yehoshua is going to be the same thing, says Rav Alex Israel. Okay, he's going to be someone Moshe's demanding that he gets a leader who's going to stay with them in battle. Now let's take a look at Rashi, because I think Rashi is very interesting. Rashi gives us a take on the psukim, and certainly gives us a picture of the mood. Yifkod Hashem. Kevin Sheshama Moshe Shamar Lo Amakom Teinachlat Tzlafchad Lebnotav. When Moshe heard that God said, "Go give the land to Tzlafchad and his to the land of Tzlafchad to his daughters," Amar Higia Shashet Batz Rachai Sheyushu Benayik Tulati. He says, "You know what? This is my time to finally ask God for something that I want. Sheyirshu banai gedulati, that my sons should take over for me." So Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says to him, "Lokach alta b'machshava lefanai." It's a great line. What does God say? That was not my thinking, right? That thought never came before me. Kadai hu Yoshua li tol schar shimusho shelo mash mitocha ohel. I think Yoshua deserves it. We should let him have it. The Zeu Shamar Shlomo no tzar teina yochal perya. And that's what Shlomo says in Mishle, that what? The one who guards the fig will eat the fruit. Yoshua put in the time. And therefore, what does he get? He gets the fruits of his labors and he becomes Moshe's successor. Rashi points out, I believe.
There must be.
Yeah.
Hashem must have some great affinity for Yoshua because he calls him an Ishua. Where is that?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
That's pretty impressive considering that.
100%. So the last source after Rashi is the Netziv in his works, the Emek Davar, and he has a beautiful explanation on that. So hold the thought, but it's a good one. But Moshe Rabbeinu, it's so sad, because Moshe Rabbeinu is basically saying, I saw my brother die, and I saw my brother pass the mantle of Kahuna to his sons. And I only have one request, God, is that my sons should be able to take over for me. And God says, again, Lo kach al tab b'machshava lefanai. I don't see it that way. I have different plans. So Rashi presents, I believe, there is a underlying sadness in Moshe's request. Shadal, or Shlomo David Lutzato, has a different answer. He says so beautifully, Moshe had a different worry. Moshe says to God, will we ever finish the race? What's going to be? We're like, I've been going at it for 40 years. The hope is that we'd get to the finish line. What's going to be? And God reassured Moshe that it was not for nothing, but the Jewish people are about to enter into the land of Israel, and it's going to happen. So in a certain sense, I believe that Shadal, of Shlomo David Lutzato versus Rashi, comes back with a much more hopeful tone. Rashi with that depressing underlying idea that Moshe asked for one thing and got a no, whereas Lutzato says the opposite, says no. Moshe Rabbeinu wants to know it's going to be okay. And God says to him, it's not going to be okay. It's going to be better than okay. It's going to be good and great because the Jewish people are going to move on to the next step. Okay. That is Rashi. Rashi then continues, Elohei Aruchos, Lama Nemar, why does it call God that? Amar Lefana, Ribona Shalolam, Galoi Lefanecha, Dato Shal Kolecha V'yachad, Ve'inun Domen Lezeh Lezeh. God, come on, let's call it how it is. You know what people are thinking, and you know that people are different. He says, he says to God, can you please pick a leader that recognizes that every Jewish person is different? All right, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, God, you cannot possibly pick my successor as someone who believes in the cookie cutter model of the Jewish people, that the Jewish people are more or less the same. No, it has to be someone who knows that every single person is unique and every person has their own shitas hachayim and will be able to pass that on. That's Rashi's point. And then Asher Yetzei Lefneyem, Lo Kederach Malchehu Mashiosh Matem Meshalchem Chelotem Lemechama. The Jewish king cannot be like the kings of the world that sit in their houses and send their soldiers along the way. Like Moshe Rabbeinu did himself, that he went and fought Sichon and Og. Shenemar al tiroto. Or like Yoshua who goes at the battle with them. And similarly by David, that he would go out with them. He goes in the front, and he comes out in the front. A few minutes. I don't believe, I think it was Rabbi Alex Israel, but it might have been someone else who said that is what all, that's what all Jewish generals in Tzahal say, right? They call out, right? Go behind me, go behind me. Ah, here it is in his footnotes. The officer's cry in the Israeli army is Acharai. You go after me, follow me. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu wants. Okay. Let's skip ahead to Rashi Pasuk Yudchet Kach Lecha Kachenu Bidvarim. Take him with your words. Ashrecha Shezachita Lanhig Banav Shel Makom. The guy, Yoshua, might not want this job. In fact, Moshe didn't want the job. So God says to him, I want you to go and I want you to pitch it and sell it to him. Tell him you are so lucky that you're getting this job because you're going to be able to be the leader of my children. That's Rashi. Rashi says, what is Moshe Rabbeinu looking for? Moshe Rabbeinu is looking for a leader that gets the Jewish people. A leader that can understand each and every one of them. Asheruach, understands the spirit of each and every one of them. Take a look at the Netziv, last source on the page. Isha Asheruach Bo, Rucha Hainu Daito Omeid Bifnei Atzmo, that it's not that he understands that the people are unique. No. He understands that he is unique. The leader has to be a person that has a very strong set of values and refuses to budge no matter what. He doesn't bend from his principles, not for his own gain, and not for the gain of the other people. Obviously, the most perfect example of this leader that the Netziv is talking about, a person that is noteh, he moves his own thoughts based on the people and where the people are at, that person would be, of course, Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech was really interested in what is the public opinion. That's how he reacted. The Netziv says, you cannot possibly be like that. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Find me a guy. Find me a leader. Find me a person that is so strong in his thoughts, so strong in his beliefs, and he's not going to be swayed. Okay. So, I think that we answered many of our questions. What is Moshe Rabbeinu's looking for? He's looking for a leader that's much stronger. He's looking for someone who really cares. But I want to show you something amazing. And this, to me, was the biggest chiddush of tonight's Chabura, because it's so brilliant. Rabbi Alex Israel does something amazing by pointing out that if you look at Pasuk Yud Zayin, and you look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph, you see that Moshe Rabbeinu presents a model of what he's looking for. What do I want in my leader? Asher Yetzei Lifneim, Asher Yavo Lifneim. He's going to be the one to take him out. He's going to want to bring him back. He's going to be the one to decide, when do we go out? When do we fight? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is looking for. Does God agree that that's what the leader should be? So take a look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph. First off, Yoshua is going to rule not by himself. He's going to rule together with Elazar HaKohen. And he's going to have to sha'alo b'mishpat ha'urim. He's going to have to ask the Urim and Tumim before God. And then al piv yeitzuv, al piv yabo. On his mouth, he's going to go out. And on his mouth, he's going to come back. Who? Whose mouth does Yoshua go out by? Is it his own? Probably not. It's probably the mouth of... Say again? It's probably Elazar's mouth, right? You're going to go confer with Elazar HaKohen through the Urim V'Tumim, and on his mouth, Elazar's mouth, you're going to go in and out. He, Yoshua, the entire Jewish people, and the entire congregation. What is going on here? So, Rabbi Israel points out that God is explaining to Moshe and to Yoshua at the same time that God is changing the status quo. the leader in the times of Moshe. Moshe was the judge. He was the shofet. And he was also the melech. Meaning the entire power was in his hands. God is if Moshe ever needed to know, do we go out to war or not? Did Moshe ever consult with the Kohen Gadol? Did he ever say, Aaron, listen, let's put our heads together. Let's decide. Is this a good idea? Is it a bad idea? No. On his own, he says, I know. Why do I know? Because I know because I speak to God. Yoshua is being told, Moshe is being told, the status quo is changing. The power will no longer be in the hands of only one person, but it's going to be in the hands of multiple people. Moshe needs to know this. Moshe needs to understand this. That is what Moshe is requesting, a Moshe-like leader, and God is responding and saying, no, it won't be a Moshe kind of leader, but it's going to be a Yoshua kind of leader. So we have one question left. The question was, what's Moshe's reaction at this point in time? How does Moshe feel at this event? Going to Har Avarim, looking over, appointing Yoshua, how does he feel?
He's disappointed.
Why is he disappointed?
His son's got knocked out.
Good. So whose opinion is that? Besides David Barrett's? That's Rashi. Yeah. Right? That's Rashi, top of the page, Shetbatz Rachai Shirshu Banai Gdulati. And God saying, Lokach Alta Machshava Lefanai. No, thank you. I have other thoughts. Okay. That's one possible way how Moshe feels. How else can Moshe feel?
You know, it's funny. He says this, Yifkar Hashem Akei Ruchah Sechol Basar, that Hashem is Akei Ruchah Sechol Basar. Yeah, right. And then Hashem says, Kacha Yeshua, but an Ish Asher Ruach Bo. Yeah, he has Ruach, but that's one Ruach, and other people have other Ruchas, I guess. I'm the only one who is like, you know, can go overall, so he has to be in collaboration with others.
Okay, good. So, I'll offer the fact.
Doesn't speak that much.
Right. Okay. So there might be disappointment. There could be the depression of I wanted to finish the job and I didn't. Meaning, like, I tried to win the race, but what happened? You know, right before the finish line, I tripped and somebody wins instead of me. So frustrating because I could have done it, but I didn't. But I want to offer one other possibility, and this is the Medrash. But the Medrash actually is based on the Psukim. Vayidaber Moshe el Hashem le'emor. Moshe speaks to God saying, he's speaking what? B'toras tzivui. He comes to God and he commands him. What's he commanding God? So the Medrash says an amazing thing. The Medrash tells a story of a man who saw this woman, this poor woman, and wanted to marry her. So what does he do? He turns to her and says, I want to marry you. And she says, come on, really? You don't want to marry me. What am I? I'm a commoner. It's not worth it. And he says, no, I do. I want to marry you. You're the perfect person for me. And she says, I'm telling you, this is not a good shidduch. They go back, they go forth. Finally, the guy says, I'm smitten. There's no other way. I need to marry you. The lady finally says, fine. All right. I'll marry you. So they get married. And after some time, he became angry with her and decides to divorce her. So she says, I never wished to marry you. You're the one that wanted to marry me. If you want to really divorce me and marry someone else, that's fine. But promise me that you'll treat the next wife better than you would have than you treated me. That's what the Medrash says. The Medrash says that's what God and Moshe are saying. God is saying, all right, time, let's pick up the next leader. Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, God, I never wanted to be the leader. I didn't ask for this marriage. And now you're divorcing me. God, I request one thing. Yifkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos L'chol Basar. I'm begging you, God, when you pick the next person who's going to lead the Jewish people, I beg you that you'll be better to him than you were to me. Now, if you read the Psukim carefully, this is where the dig comes in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Asher yetze lifnehem, asher yavo lifnehem. That he will go out, yitzias mitzrayim, he'll start the job. But asher yavo lifnehem, ki tavo el haaretz, he's going to finish the job. What is Moshe Rabbeinu saying? Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, God, I never wanted this job. You forced it on me. So I beg you, whoever you pick in my place, treat them better than me. Moshe is giving Hashem a little bit of mussar, so to speak. You pushed me to take the job, but you didn't let me finish it. Now, is Moshe Rabbeinu yelling at God? I don't think so. Is Moshe Rabbeinu telling God off? I don't really think so. But what I think is happening in Vayedaber Moshe el Hashem l'emor, when Moshe speaks to God saying, and he says those words, Asher yetzei lifnehem, asher yavo lifnehem, what Moshe Rabbeinu is showing is, he's not sad, he's hurt. He's hurt because he put in 40 years in a job that he never wanted. He gave up a third of his life in service to the Jewish people for something that he never wanted. And he doesn't even get to finish the job. I think that that is a fascinating, fascinating read of the Psukim. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, God, I really wanted it to end a little bit differently. And God is saying, okay, that's how it goes. But Moshe Rabbeinu is expressing in the end what really is in his heart, his feelings. And I think that that really does beautifully with the beginning of Parshas Vayeschanan. Because what does Moshe say? V'atchanan el Hashem ba'itai limor. He davens to God saying, I begged and I begged and I begged until I couldn't beg anymore. I asked, I requested, I cajoled, whatever you want, to try to get into the land of Israel, and God, you said no to me. Moshe Rabbeinu is the faithful servant of God till the very end, 100%. However, it doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu is not human, and it doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have feelings, and it doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu isn't hurt and sad. And yet, Moshe Rabbeinu, what does he do? V'natata me'odcha, he gives his splendor and his aura over to Yoshua, full heart, and he gives smicha in front of the entire people to attest to the fact that he agrees and holds Yehoshua to be his successor. Despite his personal sense of tragedy, he still supports holy Yehoshua. That's the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu.